now proudly presented on SNME. That's Sunday Night's Main Event, Patreon, and free feed.
We just people from the north side. Once the Timmy's hit the shore, fine. Went to ready on the four ties. Heavy traffic during 4-5. Got a hustle on the own time. Color people every port side.
Hey guys, what's going on? It's your host, your boy George McKay, and the one and only
Uncle Bobby B, baby. Look at this.
Looking oh so sweet. Amazon. Shout out to Amazon. They didn't sponsor us or anything. I just bought everything on Amazon. We got ourselves some tables. We got ourselves a new mic. We got ourselves a new setup. Trying to make it more comfy. Trying to make it more scrumptulescent, if you will.
Okay. That's a new word?
That's not a new word. It was, if you ever watched Saturday Night Live.
Not really since the 90s when it was good.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm talking about. I'm actually talking about the best of Will Ferrell. Well, they used to do the actor's studio. And they had, what's his name on, Harry Carey or whatever?
Yeah, yeah.
And he was like, your performance in Cannonball Run 2 was so, so, well, I can't think of a word, so I'm just going to make one up. Scrumptulescent. And yeah, so it's actually been a word since like the 90s anyways.
Okay, I was more of like the early 90s. Like
what, like Sandler?
Yeah, the Sandler, Dana Carvey, Mike Myers.
Never liked Dana Carvey. Never really found Dana Carvey to be... Dana Carvey with as an ensemble cast member? Yes. Dana Carvey on his own? No. Master of Disguise, hands down one of the worst
movies. No, that movie was that movie was bad. But like his first movie, Opportunity Knocks, also bad, but still got like more funny moments than...
Opportunity Knocks was kind of like, I remember that movie. It was more of a, we're going on a tangent for a second before we get into War Chamber, but that's what we're here to discuss. It was more like Secret of My Success. It was like a knockoff version of Secret of My Success.
He was a con man. He conned his way into
pretty much like Michael J. Fox's Secret of My Success.
Yeah, so it was pretty okay flick in my opinion, but tangent anyways, because we're talking about War Chamber.
Yeah, we are. We're talking about War Chamber, and big news coming on the horizon. In literally 2 weeks from now, we're going to get War Chamber 2. That's right. There were supposed to be two War Chamber matches, and they've obviously split them up because the last 30 to 40 minutes of this pay-per-view was all War Chamber, and it was quite a way to end the pay-per-view. It was phenomenal. This fantastic. Actually, I would say, was the most appealing setup, most well-filmed setup, and I really liked the new look of the stage. And yeah, I get it. They were in like an arena type. They had the basketball hardwood floor, but I really liked the aesthetic of everything, and I also really liked how the crowd was spaced out. I always get a little bit of anxiety when we're watching the Philly shows or even the New York shows because I feel like everybody's in a sardine can, and I honestly feel like that roof's going to implode.
Nah, they got space there.
I don't know. It just looks tight. This looked more breathable. Everybody looked a little bit more comfortable because I think there was more space to play with.
Yeah, it's a Florida crowd too, right? It's a different...
And they utilized... Shout out to the Florida crowd because they were hot throughout the entire pay-per-view. I will say that much. And they also utilized MLW, utilized the space very well. They had a couple matches in the rear ring, couple matches in the front ring, which really kind of spaced everything out really well.
Yeah, and we also had a match that didn't even take place in Florida. We had a CMLL match that was televised, which was, woo!
It was incredible. So let's not waste any time, as I'm kind of semi-cut off the screen, so we're going to have to adjust the position later on, but it's all good. So first match of the card was Featherweight Championship action. We had Jannai Kai with Selena De La Renta, of course, facing the one and only Unagi Shakaya. Did I get it right?
I think you did.
Shakaya. I think
Shakaya?
So. Shakaya? Shakaya, yeah. Shikaya, yeah.
All right, there you go.
I'll Shiaka? Take Unagi Shiaka? Shikaka? No, it wasn't Shikaka. It was Shinaka. Shiaka. No. Okay, Unagi. We're just going to go with Unagi. So Unagi and Jannai, this was a fucking great match. Yeah, great match to kick off the card. The strikes, the speed, everything. And I really loved Unagi. And the reason why I did this, shout out to friends. If you know, you know. If you don't know, that's on you. But Unagi impressed the hell out of me. This was by far Jannai Kai's hardest title defense. These two ladies went 12 minutes, bell to bell, not including entrances, bell to bell, 12 minutes long. And it was epic. And I felt like the Florida crowd might have underappreciated this match a little bit. But as the pay-per-view progressed, they got hotter. But this match was a great way to open. And Jannai Kai making a statement. And Unagi impressed the hell out of me.
Yeah, I probably would have maybe thrown this match second, but I loved it. Even if the crowd took a little bit to get into it, I think they eventually won them over because they were just beating the shit out of each other.
Well, how about the finisher? That just that kick to the face of Unagi. Oh, just knocked her out. Kicked fucking her,
like, out. And Janai has been so dominant since arriving on the in the major league. So this was her biggest test. I think this is the most punishment she's ever taken from an opponent here in the league. But ultimately, you know, she retains her title. But great match. And I really, I was thinking to myself, I don't know why I'm not watching Tokyo Joshi Pro Wrestling, because everybody we've seen that's come over so far has impressed the hell out of us.
But Unagi, I think, by far was my favorite. I want to see more of Unagi. I don't think her and Janai are quite finished yet. I think we can get one more match out of these two.
I'd love
another one. I'd even do a series of seven, personally. But again, I'm not Court Bauer. I don't know the financial standings.
Well, we don't know where Court Bauer is right now.
Well, Court Bauer is, well, got knocked the fuck out a couple weeks ago. But anyways, next match on the card. The captain of Boomaye, Alex Kane, versus WTF's newest addition, Big Money AJ Francis. This match, I enjoyed.
I did, actually.
But I enjoyed this match because Alex Kane sold the fuck out of everything AJ Francis was doing. And AJ Francis did impress me. That knee to the face of Kane, then up and over the top rope, onto the floor, landing on his feet. That dude has shown a lot of hiccups of not being so agile, but that was pretty fucking agile. Well, I mean, that was ballerina-esque.
He's a big man, too, so it's a little
He's a big man, but I mean, there's big men that have impressed. So being a big man is not an anchor anymore. It's actually, you could do a lot. It's just like in basketball when a center shoots a three now. It's not surprising because that's standard in basketball.
Have you seen, another tangent, have you seen where everybody scores from now compared to 20 years ago?
Oh, 100%.
There's literally nobody shooting, like, mid-range shooters. There's none. You're either three or inside the key. That's it.
Sometimes you get the mid-range shooters, but it's completely by accident. Yeah, it's like clock's running out. You just got to, like, get as close as you can.
Nobody goes for just two-point shots anymore if you're outside the key.
Well, you always want to, even when you're going for a two-point, you're going for the foul because you want to get the N1, so you're really going for a three. Yeah,
so it's crazy how things change over time, not just basketball, professional wrestling.
Absolutely. Big men being agile now is the norm.
Yeah, and you know, we talked about, both of us were kind of like, on AJ Francis. Like, no shade. We're just like, we're not sold on AJ Francis. We want to see what he can do.
Well, you put shit in my head, I'll be honest with you, because the ring gear, I couldn't take my fucking eye. I was like, I actually, at one point, I had to kind of, like, do this to kind of stop the...
It is loud.
The blending. It is very,
very loud.
But and I get it, big money, the whole money, I get it. But I think there's a way that it could have been toned down. But again, it's his choice, it's his gear. I'm not going to fuck with it. If he likes it, he likes it. But to go back on the thing before I get your thoughts on this match, what really impressed the fucking shit out of me in this match was, again, Alex Kane selling. The fact that Kane, who we've seen lift bigger, could not get up Francis. And I really thought Kane sold it well. And then the fucking distraction by MSL. Mr. Thomas not getting over to the corner as typically fast as he would have. And I will say that. Thomas, I don't know what's popping. We know that the dissension is happening.
I know what's popping.
Yeah, but just still, as a fan, I want to believe in the best. And I don't think you had Alex's intentions there. And that caused Alex to fall right into a choke slam. And Francis, with the 1-2-3, ridiculously fast. Ref was paid. Fast count. We all know this. WTF sold something. But then at the end, as the Boomaye Fight Club entourage entered the ring surrounding AJ, I thought they were going to beat him down. No, they all pledged their loyalty to him, leaving with AJ, leaving Thomas and Kane by themselves. So if the Boomaye Fight Club entourage has now left Kane and Thomas, Thomas is sure to follow very, very quickly. But the fact that they pledged their allegiance to Francis, that surprised me, because it's almost like AJ's kind of swooped underneath and fully taken the Boomaye Fight Club from Alex Kane. I thought he was there to blow it up, not overtake it.
Where do Mr. Thomas's allegiances lie? You can see the cracks. We've been seeing it for months.
Oh, they're forming like crazy.
It's going to be, and AJ Francis now, you know, the Boomaye Fight Club entourage raising their fists and choosing to follow him. What does this mean for the future of the Boomaye Fight Club? Does it even exist anymore? What does it mean for the future of Alex Kane? There's so many questions to be answered. But AJ Francis really sold himself to me personally with this match. I really liked his work. I loved the storytelling, George, as you said, him not being able to get AJ Francis up for the suplex and then eventually laying a couple good ones in.
That suplex into the roll through German was fucking sweet.
And the choke slam from AJ looked fantastic. You know, clearly Alex is like, let's get this boy over if that's what we're doing. And they both did a great job of playing their parts in this match. Also, I love a good paid referee spot. When's the last time you seen that?
The last time was done with actually Filthy Tom Lawler with the forged drug test. And then the paid ref. They bought in the crooked basketball ref.
What, like 2 years ago?
That was just coming out of the pandemic. So 2.5, 3 years ago?
Yeah, so I haven't seen a paid ref spot in like 2.5 years anywhere.
At least at MLW.
At least, and I'm talking anywhere. I haven't seen it. I'm not saying it didn't happen, but I haven't seen one. So it's something you use sparingly, but it's there to be used. And I love a good paid off ref spot. And it fits with, you know, MSL being the world's greatest sports entertainment promoter and sneakiest cat in the league.
Shout out to MSL in this pay-per-view. A lot of quick costume changes, and he pulled it off nicely. And actually, even my mother-in-law and my stepfather-in-law were watching a little bit of the pay-per-view with me last night, and they noticed that he is a shady snake, as my mother-in-law called him, a snake oil salesman, if she'd ever seen one.
Wow, that's defamatory and
oh, fuck off.
That I wouldn't. I think we should cut that because I don't want to open ourselves up to slander litigation.
Well, how about this? At the end of the match, Joe tries to get a reaction from Alex Kane as to what just transpired. And all Alex Kane said to Joe is that ref is a hoe. And he walked away. And that was it. That was a soundbite. Joe, actually, I believe he said fucking hoe. But they bleeped out the fucking in time, or they caught it, or they did something. But
you bleeped out the fucking.
I couldn't make out all of the fucking. But yeah.
Sounds like me when I was a kid watching channels that were high
up in the Baby Blues, Channel 7.
Scrambled.
All right. So Akira was supposed to do a one-on-one interview earlier on in the day, and arriving at the arena in Tampa, only to be met by the calling, 5-on-1 assault, barbed wire, actually 6-on-1 if you count the barbed wire that RSP wrapped around Akira's face. And you have to wonder, going into Battle Riot 2, which we know the calling versus the Death Fighters will take place, if the leader of the Death Fighters is going to be 100%. Because after that 5-on-1 assault, and it was smart by the calling to take out Akira.
Of course.
Very smart, very tactical. I'm surprised, though, because I thought they would take out Raven, only because Raven is like the martyr-type character in this situation. But taking out Akira, smart move, I dug it. Next, we got a debut for MLW, Devin Diaz. He's coming out to the ring. No, he's not. He's attacked by Brian Brock. Brian Brock is like a one called Manders 2.0.
I hate doing that to people because it's like, oh, you're just saying.
It's not an insult.
No, but like legit when I was, because I was watching on my phone, I was sitting in my car having a smoke and I was like, oh, is that Manders? And then like it took me about a good 4 or 5 seconds to be like, wait, that is not Manders, but he similar size and aesthetic. So it
only difference is, well, I would have to say, would be the cowboy boots. He wears red and white ones, whereas Manders wears black and
right.
brown.
And they do kind of, it's not like when people go like to Trey Miguel and Ricochet, like, oh, you guys look alike. And it's like, no, they don't. But these guys actually do kind of look alike. So I was, tripped out by that. That was interesting. And Buckshot, Brian Brock showed up and he wanted a fight.
Well, he was supposed to fight Diaz, but I guess he didn't really like the fact that Diaz was his opponent. Didn't respect him at all. Took him out 2 shots, actually. And he called an open challenge. And in MLW, when you call an open challenge, you need to understand who's in that locker room. And sure enough, who answered the call? Well, the Black Hand of Contra, Mads Cruel Kruger, he answered the call and he fucked Brian Brock up. Now, don't get me wrong. Brian Brock did get a couple spots in. He did look decent. The door landing on Cruel's head, but also staying stuck to Cruel's head because it got hooked on the buckle, I thought was pretty funny. And Cruel was trying to shake it off like a dog trying to shake off like the cone.
It was good, good thinking on his feet.
There. It was good thinking on his feet, but Cruel just... And this quickly turned into a match, into how many doors can we break, into I am going to fuck Brian Brock up. And he did just that. And then they proceed to put Brock in a body bag and carry Brock off, much like they did Jacob Fatu. So I'm not sure we know Fatu was written off for television. But as the stands as to why they've done with Brian Brock, I'm not sure. But Contra, the Death Squad, and Cruel, this is a different version. This is a more sadistical, tactical version. I never thought I'd say the word tactical in Contra without Joseph Samael there. But Cruel has done a very good job of being very, very tactful. I will say that.
Absolutely. It is a different Contra, more dangerous, I think, more unhinged, because Joseph Samael, at least, you know, he had a grand plan in mind. I don't know if Mads Cruel Kruger does. I think his grand plan is just destruction and laying waste to everybody that's in front of him. And that's more dangerous because that's unpredictable.
Well, that's a man who essentially has nothing to lose. And when you have nothing to lose, the world is your bonfire, if you will.
Well put. So, yeah, it was interesting for Brian Brock to, like, make your debut on a high and then go out right on your back. So I was like, this guy just got the whole gamut of emotions in that one segment. But, yeah, I hope we'll see more of this guy. He looks like a hoss. I love a good hoss. So.
And we know that MLW's roster always turns over. It's always fresh, and it's always people that we may not know too well that we're getting exposed to, and that's what I really enjoy about MLW. Speaking of another debut, how about the debut of Richard Adonis, who was quickly manhandled by Bad Dude Tito. Literally two moves, and Tito cuts a promo after saying that he didn't come here to, you know, just be the Bad Dude. He came here for gold. His mind is set on gold. Now,
doesn't even care
what kind of gold. He just wants gold. And putting his staple there very, very quickly.
Give me the gold, Chico.
On exactly what's happening. Next match. This is for Matt Riddle's New Japan Pro
Television Championship.
Television title. Cozy Fujita versus Matt Riddle. Holy fuck. This, yeah, by far for me, was match of the fucking night.
Fujita is wild, and this dude graduated the Young Lions quick. He, damn, these guys, it was a TV title rules match, so 15-minute stipulation, which means it's, you got to be offensive if you want that championship.
And offense was literally the name of the game. Like you said, a graduation of the Young Lions, but also a member of TDMK, which is a big faction in New Japan, probably the second biggest faction next to the Bullet Club, I would say.
Yeah, they're...
Fujita just showed exactly what the fuck he can do, and Riddle was fucking phenomenal. I will say the one high spot for me in this fucking match was Riddle turning that almost tilt-a-whirl slam that Fujita was going to into a fucking tombstone. He caught a mid-tilt.
Yeah, it was wild.
And he just dropped him on his fucking head, and this, despite all the PR problems that Matt Riddle himself has acknowledged that he is, Matt Riddle can fucking go. And MLW, bringing Riddle back in, allowing the partnership with New Japan to flourish like it has been for the last couple of years, since they were really the ones next to TNA that really took a command of the Forbidden Door. MLW and TNA were working with everybody for a very long time. And honestly and truly, this, I could go for another match, but this for me, and I'll put my staple on it now, this was match of the card for me. This was match of the night for me. Riddle just continues to make me a fan. I've already was a fan, but he continues to show me why I am a fan. And Fujita, I'm absolutely impressed with. I can't say enough good things about that young buck.
And I think Matt Riddle, maybe just from the way he's wrestling, I think he's maybe enjoying himself a bit more. I think he's a little more unshackled, and he's just having more fun with wrestling right now than he was maybe in the past. So good on him. And yeah, Fujita, fantastic. And just going back to TMDK, Bad Dude Tito, also a member. I don't think there's anybody in wrestling right now that I'm higher on than Bad Dude Tito. I think this dude could go all the way in Japan. Like, he is a tremendous... He looks so natural in there, like such a badass. This dude is fucking awesome. Like, I've become a big-time Bad Dude Tito fan.
Yeah, very quickly, absolutely. He's won a lot of people over. Cesar Durant cutting a promo right after this match, congratulating Selena on bringing Bad Dude Tito in. You know, great signing. And Janai retaining, but if Delmi was in the ring, we would have a new champ. Quote unquote from CD. He's going to teach her a lesson in Chicago. Selena, you bring your best luchadors. I'll bring my best luchadors. And whoever gets the most wins throughout the night gets the key to open the ultimate power in Lucha Libre. And that is huge. So we're going to get that at Azteca Lucha May 11th in Chicago, in Chi-Town. Yeah, that's my chocolate foam cold brew. It's fantastic. War Chamber 2 takes place in 2 weeks, which we will cover, of course. And then we get Battle Riot June 1st in Hotlanta. So the next couple months leading into the summer are going to be fantastic for MLW. And I really, Azteca Lucha, May 11th in Chicago, that's the one to watch, because we got to find out who's going to get the ultimate power and what the ultimate power is.
And that's going to be a night of lucha libre. So very much. Oh, I can't wait to see what's going to happen.
Well, you know, you don't have to wait too long. I mean, for that match, you do. You have to wait 2 months. But Lucha Libre is coming up right now because we got a CMML match. It happened on international soil. It's Angel de Oro, which translates into Angel of God, or Angel of Gold, sorry. And he's versing the middleweight champ, Mystico. And this is for the middleweight title in the CMLL ring. And this match was everything that you wanted it to be. It was Lucha Libre in the toppest, truest, purest form. It was fantastic. And Mystico, again, Tilt-A-Whirl is becoming a thing. That Tilt-A-Whirl armbar was insane. He had Oro tapping within 3 seconds of landing. 3 seconds of landing.
You know what made that look so good was Oro, man, because when he got a couple rotations around, he threw himself down. Like, he slammed himself down, and it looked so fucking good. The stuff those guys were doing was smooth and fluid, and it is Lucha Libre is art when it is done like that.
Absolutely, and you know, Cesar Durant smiling probably from ear to ear because Mystico is in his camp. So we know we're going to see a middleweight title fight May 11th at Chicago. Mystico will be going up against whoever Selena brings in. You know Selena's going to have some surprises for us. But I'm digging this whole battle. It's not like the kidnapping and the getting people. It's like these two are going to go head to head, and I'm here for all of it.
Let's go.
The two biggest egos in MLW about to tear each other apart. Not physically, just with who can. It's literally who can out-chess maneuver who. You throw me out Mystico, what am I going to throw out? Time's going to tell. It's going to be fantastic. We get a Mads Kruger promo. 2 years he waited. 2 years he waited. And tonight, he will light the spark. And MLW will burn to the ground. So whatever the spark is, he's waited 2 years for it, and it's happening tonight, and MLW will fall according to the Black Hand of Contra. And here we go. Goji Max and SGC versus WTF in the War Chamber. This is our main event of the evening. Josh Bishop out first. Matt Justice out second. These two went 5 minutes. So War Chamber is very much like War Games for WWE. Two men in the ring for 5 minutes, then every 90 seconds, another member of the opposing team enters. Bishop and Justice really took a lot out of each other very early on in this match. And what makes the War Chamber match different from War Games, weapons are under the ring for people to bring in before they enter the ring. In a War Chamber match, the weapons are already in there. So it's literally the devil's
playhouse. The chamber is already prepped for war.
Yes, and there's tables, there's buckets, Lowe's bucket, shout out to Lowe's, might have got promotion on that, I'm not sure, but the blue Lowe's bucket was there. Filthy Tom Lawler was the second man out for Team WTF, and Matt Justice was really in a bad way until Manders came out to even the score. After Manders came out, we had Davey Boy coming out, who again was the biggest man in the fight. But how about Okamura? Okamura comes out with that cutter and suplex combo, man.
He's coming here, eh?
I know. I heard that. I'm very excited.
We got to go check out
Absolutely. Okamura. But Okamura, for a man of his age, much like Kojima, still killing it, still doing it. And the fact that he was able to do that on Tom Lawler and on fucking Bishop, pretty damn impressive. When he came out, the score was even though Davey Boy was there, it was really even. Holiday coming out as the final member for WTF, and then Kojima obviously coming out as the final member for Team MLW, because Koji Max and SGC were Team MLW. Again, a couple crazy spots in this match. The double tornado DDT off. So picture this.
Through the table.
Manders, Lawler, Justice on top, DDT, tornado DDT through the fucking table. That was the most insane thing I'd ever seen SGC do up until this point. And that was just fucking fire. The knockout shot, though, on Richard Holiday. Like, he dropped like a sack of fucking potatoes.
Night.
Chaos. I loved it. Shout out to OG Bill Alfonso, ECW OG. Great to see him out there supporting Team MLW. He was kind of out there to, in a way, counteract St. Laurent. But St. Laurent found a way to get involved. He came out with a helmet, like a war tank helmet. Was able to throw it over the top. Bishop using it actually on on Manders to do a couple of headbutts was pretty fucking genius.
And I thought the bag of powder, like, I was really like, oh, they used a bag of powder, I know. But, like, if they had just got, like, some Toms and had Buddy crush them up, it would have been such a Bloodsport throwback moment.
Absolutely.
But the powder enough made me pop. But yeah, and something I just want to mention, that was probably the best filmed post-match beatdown sequence I have ever seen. The way that it was
produced. Well, we haven't got there yet. Hold on. We haven't even announced the winner.
Well, we know. Talking about the knockout shot.
Yeah, but there are people who don't know.
Yeah.
So the knockout shot, the pin, and Team MLW celebrates as Team, you know, WTF runs for the hills. And at that point, Contra returns. And Akira Kwan is standing side by side with Mads Kruger and the Death Squad. They overtake the ring by cutting some of the ring off. They jump over the top. It's literally a 15-on-1 assault. And at the end of it, everyone in the ring from Team MLW is covered down in Contra flags. Contra waves the banner high. And yes, I do agree with you, Rob. And now I will let you go on your tangent because now everybody knows this hands down was the best filmed final beatdown going off the air sequence that I have seen from any promotion.
It was the way the camera was, it was being cut really fast, it was very chaotic, it conveyed that sense of chaos of what was going on in the ring. Mm-hmm. The way they had it, everybody placed, like everything about it was just perfect. That if you're trying to film a post-match beatdown, that is a standard you can look to on how it's done. There was a little story being told with that. They had the return of Akira Kwan. It was fantastic. I thought this PLE, whatever you want to call it, premium live event, was top to bottom a great show.
Absolutely. And shout out to the MLW production team. Shout out to the location scouts. Shout out to the entire roster. Shout out to the bookers. Shout out to the producers. Shout out to everybody. Even though Corp Hour's not there, we know he's there. Fact is, this was a fantastic show from top to bottom. I will say, and I think we've said this a few times, after all their live events this year, it's almost my favorite live event this year. This one really is my favorite live event of this year. I can go back, rewatch this 2 days from now and have a different reaction. See something that I might have missed. And they done so well with keeping this Boumaier storyline with Francis and Kane fresh. The WTF's takeover storyline is still very much there. But now Contra in the mix, this is all just implosion ready to happen. You got to remember, Contra's out for everybody. So don't think for a second that WTF and St. Laurent are safe. They just didn't win. If they had won this match, they would have got beat down too by Contra. It didn't 100%. Fucking matter. It didn't matter who won 100%. This match. Whoever won this match, Contra was going to beat you the fuck down. Plain and simple.
You got it.
And that's it for War Chamber 1 review and discussion show. War Chamber 2 taking place April 20th. That's 420. MLW loves the 420 references. And absolutely. We're going to see War Chamber 2, which is the Death Fighters versus The Calling. We're also going to see Timothy Thatcher. We know that for sure because they were announced, but they weren't at 1, so they're most likely going to be at 2. But, man, again, Riddle and Fujita stealing the show. Unagi and Janai starting it off with a banger. Brian Brock getting his ass kicked. It was fantastic. Cruel looking, mean and lean. Just everything running on all cylinders. And you would think with not having one of the pillars in Jacob Fatu at these PLEs for the last couple of ones, you would wonder what hangs in the balance. But you know what? MLW is doing what MLW does best, better than anyone else in pro wrestling. They are evolving and thriving and continuing to show why you shouldn't sleep on MLW. And if you are sleeping on an MLW, get your head out of your fucking ass.
Yeah, you know what? I'm going to be seeing Speedball Mike Bailey tonight. I'm going to ask him if he's familiar with Janai Kai, because if he's not, I'm really going to push for him to try and get a match with her.
That'd be fire.
Somewhere, wherever it is. Yeah.
Where are you going to see Speedball tonight?
He's going to be...
top tier, right?
No. Crossbody Pro Wrestling and Fightertainment, which is Speedball's promotion, are doing a cross event.
Oh, nice.
So I'll be at that.
Well, I will be calling play-by-play for New Frontier Pro Wrestling tonight in Coburg. So,
we're so spoiled. We have so much good wrestling down
absolutely.
Here.
Absolutely. We are very much spoiled. We're very much blessed. This will be dropping on Easter Sunday. So everyone that's watching, happy Easter. I don't have time to edit today. I got to get there in Coburg. And we're already behind.
Happy Easter.
I had an issue with my gimbal. I bought a new gimbal. I'm very pissed off. But anyways, peace, love, and wrestling, guys. We'll see you on the next show.
Adios.
We just people from the north side. Once the Timmy's hit the shore fine. Winter ready on the four ties. Heavy traffic during 4-5. Gotta hustle on the own time. Color people every port side. We just people from...